I don't want to set the world.
Because I learned about kids jumping on my lap, and I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
To chase, at least for a moment, Trump and the maggots off the stage.
You are fake news.
Dan, and it get hot. I got a lot of, I got hairy legs that turn, that turn blonde in the sun.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
Well, at real Donald Trump, at least I will go down as a president.
Welcome to the Rising Republic. I am L. Douglas Hogan, your friend, fellow patriot, brother in arms. Hey, I got a great show for you today. We are going to talk about Roe versus Wade. I'm going to apply my Bible twist to it. Talk about how it's wrong and why the decision was made, why it's wrong. So, grab yourself a 5-hour energy, pop your eyes wide open if you're watching this video by its special segment, because after this show, if you want to hear the rest of it, you're going to have to slide over to the Rising Republic on any major podcasting platform to listen to the rest of the story, to listen to the rest of the podcast. Anyway, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. I'm going to kill my music real quick here. Roe versus Wade. All right, we got a problem here. All right, so Roe versus Wade is a landmark decision that happened way back when. There was a lady. Let me see if I can find her name here real quick, because her memory is escaping me right off the bat, by the name of Norma McCorvey. Okay, back in 1969, this woman became pregnant. The problem was with her that she lived in Texas. And in Texas, they have or had very strict, I shouldn't say very strict, I agree with them 100%. They had laws against abortion so that you could only get an abortion if the mother's life was in jeopardy. That's how I believe. I believe in defending my life. I believe in defending my life, and if my life is in danger, if my life is being threatened, I have a right to life and I have a right to defend myself. That being said, I don't have the right to take somebody else's life. And I'm tired of the argument, my body, my choice, but that's what you're hearing all the time. Roe versus Wade was about a woman who had three kids. She got pregnant. This was her third. This was her next pregnancy, and she didn't want to have the baby. So she took it to court, and her argument was that there was a violation of her privacy. That's how she attacked this thing. So this whole thing, this whole Roe versus Wade thing, became the most famous ever landmark decision made by the Supreme Court based on privacy. A woman wanted to maintain her right to privacy, so she took it to the highest court in the land, where her name is Jane Roe in the paperwork. But she got super famous based on this landmark decision because she wanted to maintain her privacy. This was a murder of convenience. And this is why Roe versus Wade is wrong. This landmark decision was cast across the entire United States. And it's all based on a lie. You cannot take a baby and kill it because it's an inconvenience. You can't kill out of convenience. You say, my body, my choice. and you believe that it's okay for a woman to do anything to her body that she wants. If she don't want something in her body, that's her right. And you say that it's her right to take something out of her body. But what you're not considering is that baby has rights too. But here's the real kicker. Here's the real lie. Not only was she not worried about her privacy, not only was this just a murder of convenience, that she didn't want a third child, this woman later confessed, after she became a Christian, she later confessed that the whole ploy of this thing, because she was telling everybody that she was raped and she didn't want to carry the baby, but that wasn't good enough in the Texas law, because she could have carried the baby full term without any complications to her physical health, and that was already proven by the two previous children she had. So, but not only was she not raped, but she later admitted that she was paid by anti-abortion groups. And this was on a documentary that was filmed shortly before her death, when she died in 2017. By the way, her baby, because this case wasn't settled until, I think, like 2 years, something like that, 2 years after she originally filed. When she originally filed, she was 6 months pregnant, or somewhere around there. Nobody knows who this baby is, whether it's male or female. The baby was born, so it became almost a moot argument. She said this, and I'm quoting here. She says, "I took their money, and they put me out in front of the cameras and tell me what to say. That's what I'd say. It was all an act. I did it well, too. I'm a good actress." So let me summarize this. A woman gets pregnant. She doesn't want to carry it. She takes it to court because this is something else, a little bit of information that I didn't add in. She goes to an illegal abortion clinic. And when she gets there, she finds out that the police has already shut it down. So she can't get an illegal abortion. So this is why she takes it to court. The argument is she's raped and she doesn't want to carry the child. It's taken up by a man, I believe it was a Texas district attorney. Took up the case. She filed the case against the district attorney. His name, last name was Wade. And it was carried on and on and on for, I want to say at least 2 years beyond the end of her pregnancy. So the child would have already been born. She wins her case, and the Supreme Court throws this law out all across the United States, because one of the things that her lawyers threw out there was, I believe it was the Fourth Amendment, a violation of the Fourth Amendment, violation of the 14th Amendment, and the Ninth Amendment. Basically, within these three amendments of the Constitution, there's a realm of privacy where a person doesn't have to carry a baby if they don't want to. But what it all came down to in the decision-making process for the justices of the Supreme Court was the viability of the baby. They're saying once you've reached X amount of time after conception, you reach this level of viability where the baby can survive outside of the mother's womb. And that is what they said should be the cutoff. So there's this area that we don't agree with as Christians. Christians believe that life begins at conception, that God has created us in his image. And by the joining of a sperm and an egg, life is produced. We don't count sperm as a human life. We don't count egg as a human life. There has to be a combination, a conception of the two for life to be given. That's why Christians feel so strongly about this. And it cannot be compromised. No good Christian will ever compromise the killing, the senseless killing of life, human life. And I don't want to hear the pundits and the liberal arguments about killing of animals, because Christians also view that animals are given to people for food. The Bible says that. So we eat animals. That's where we get proteins from plants. We get proteins from animals. We eat animals. We're talking about human life, the sanctity of human life. So since Roe versus Wade became the law across the United States of America, 61 million babies' lives have been taken. 61 million babies' lives. I'm going to let you know right now, at the end of this podcast, I'm going to allow the listener to turn off the podcast, because I'm going to talk about in detail what happens during an abortion, the gruesome details of what happens when a baby's life is taken during abortion. If you're weak-stomached, if you're weak-kneed, then I would recommend at the given point, at the end of this podcast, that you turn off the podcast. If you want to know, stick around. If you're like me and you're okay with your teen daughter hearing the details, bring her in close. Share this. Make sure she understands that a baby has a life, it has feelings, it has emotions, and what she is about to hear is disturbing, and that she should prepare herself and know it is not just a simple decision. We don't murder babies. We especially don't murder babies out of convenience. And that's exactly what Roe versus Wade has become. A legalized way to murder for convenience. But it has to be a baby. It has to be a defenseless, voiceless baby. It's all a law of convenience. If you get pregnant, you can kill it. You can go out there, you can run around, you can take off your protection, not take your birth control, get pregnant, and not have to deal with the consequences. And that is a major issue with me. It is a big reason why we're having so many problems with our youth today. There's no personal accountability anymore. No personal responsibility. You can do anything you want to do and not have any consequences for it. It is satanic. It is Luciferian. From the beginning of time, Satan and anybody who worships a false god has sacrificed babies. The case of this woman, Norma McCorvey, she didn't want the baby. And the best way that they could get it to pass, because of the laws in Texas, was to come up with some outlandish reason to have the abortion. So she said it was a violation of her privacy. She didn't want anybody to know that she was pregnant. So she took it to the highest court of the land, this lawsuit, and her name is now famous because she wanted to be private. Come on. Tell me you don't smell the hypocrisy of this. There's this thing in the Constitution: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unless you're not old enough to speak yet. Is that how that works? Does it say that in the Constitution? Does it say anywhere in the Constitution that only adults that can speak have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Because babies don't have a voice. They especially can't talk in the mother's womb. And through science, we know that they can feel pain, that they dream, they have brains, they have brain waves. And I'm going to show you today that through Scripture, through the Bible, this is the Christian perspective, that through the Bible, we know that life, in fact, is ordained of God. All life is ordained of God. And He knows us before we are even born. We are a life created in the image of God. So for a human to take the life of another without just cause is murder. And the Bible says, "Thou shalt not murder." That's killing without just cause. It's one of the Ten Commandments, in which Jesus at one point in His ministry said, "Love your neighbor and love God with all of your heart." And upon these two things, all the covenant, all the law hangs on them. In other words, you're not going to kill if you love. You're not going to steal if you love. You're not going to covet if you love. Every commandment, every bit of law, everything that was ever written under the Old Testament and in the New, it all hangs on the ordinance of love. We don't kill babies. It is satanic and Luciferian. It is evil. And I cannot possibly tell you how much I detest it. I cannot sit in the company of someone who is talking about how they had an abortion unless, for some reason, it threatened their life, which it is so minuscule. If you look at the stats, if you look at the 61 million abortions, how many of those were because the mother's life was in jeopardy? The number is so minuscule, I don't even want to talk about it. It doesn't even register on the radar. It's oblivious. It doesn't even matter. It might as well not even count. So, in January of 1973, the Supreme Court issued a 7-2 decision ruling that the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution provides a right to privacy that protects a pregnant woman's right to choose whether or not to have an abortion. Well, first of all, abortions are not in the Constitution. Second of all, the Constitution was built and designed to protect the people from a tyrannical government. That's it. If the Constitution, or if the government were to get too big and too tyrannical, the Constitution was there to reaffirm our rights. Our rights are given to us by God. And the Constitution simply affirms them. It is not an exhaustive list of our rights. You can't possibly put down on a piece of paper everything we have a right to do. So I don't understand how this woman, McCorvey, wanted to maintain her privacy, so she took it directly to the government. That don't even make sense. That's hypocritical. So I'm looking here through some of my research notes here, and I see that Norma McCorvey, found out that she was pregnant with her third child. So earlier I said, I didn't know if it was her second or her third, but it was her next child. It was her third child. She had two. She didn't want the third. So when I hear somebody talk about how they're concerned that Roe versus Wade might be overturned, I hope it does get overturned, because it was the lie that was made into a law. It should be overturned. It's vile. But I also believe, as an American, that that person should have to prove to the state, not to the federal government, not to anybody, should not be federal law. They should have to prove to the state that that birth would kill the mother first before there's an abortion. That's fair. To make this a blanket law, it's not right. It's wrong. 61 million babies. Some things I just can't put into words. Some feelings I just can't put into words. So it's a little rough on me. So let's talk about this from a biblical perspective for just a few minutes here. Let me ask you this question. Just four words. Are the unborn human? Are they human? If they're not human, then what are they? I love documentaries. And I love science fiction. And I especially love to watch anything that has to do with planets, the solar system, the universe, our galaxy, any other galaxy. I love this kind of thing. And in having, a love, a passion for that kind of a thing, I can't help but to hear a lot of scientists out there talk about their search for life. We have a rover on Mars right now that has been walking around for a while. Well, I should say he's been rolling around for a while. It's collecting samples of rock and dirt and air. And the whole point behind all of this is to find out if there's life now, if there life was, or if there's life developing on Mars, life outside of Earth. I have watched documentaries, and I've read stories and articles of scientists sending capsules into space outside of our atmosphere to collect molecules, samples, whatever, of space in search of life. And they have found some pretty odd things up there. It might only be one cell, and they're calling it life. They're so excited to find something on Mars of any kind of carbon-based life. Anything carbon-based. A cell, two cells, three cells, they're going to call it life. But when a sperm and an egg meet, That's not life. When cells begin to multiply, begin to grow, that's not life. When a nervous system forms, that's not life. When a head and arms and appendages form, that's not life. When brain waves start to circulate and cause things to move, that's not life. When this thing is poked and prodded, that's not life. When it responds to sound, that's not life. When it grows into a small human-like form with ears and eyes and a nose and two arms and 10 little fingers and 10 little toes, that's not life. And I say, that's a lie. It's a lie of convenience. The left wants to murder babies because let's get down to the bottom of this. There is a dark spirit running things in this world, and the most of us are just oblivious to it in the world. We're just moving along. These babies are being killed, and it's exactly what the darkness wants to happen. It's Luciferian. This goes way back to the ancient gods of the Bible when babies were sacrificed. Look up Molech. Do a search, a Bible search of Molech, M-O-L-E-C-H, Molech. See what you discover. Do a little rabbit hole digging with the deep state Hollywood. I'm not going to weed off into the weeds here, but see what you discover. It's a sickness in this world and a darkness in this world, and it's about babies and children and their sacrifice, their death, like they don't even matter. And this is just my theory. This isn't in the Bible, but it might just be because Jesus said, talking about the children, let them come unto me and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of heaven. Satan seeks to pervert everything that has been established by God to create his own kingdom. He has an artificial whatnot for everything that the Lord does. He has an imitation for everything. He has his own kingdom set up right here. In the Bible, in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 1, verse 5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. So this is the Lord talking through Jeremiah. Before I formed you in the womb, the Lord is saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Just based on that Bible verse right there, and that if that was the only one in Scripture, we could say with certainty that God knows us even before we were born. Therefore, our life from conception matters, and we are truly life. We are human. So, you know, additionally in the Bible, you know, there's a lot of language given to unborn babies, such as woman with child or with child. Here, let's do this little keyword search for you here in the Bible. For those of you that don't know, the New Testament is written in Greek. So you can do a keyword search here. Look up the word brephos, B-R-E-P-H-O-S. Okay, and this is very interesting because when you read Luke chapter 1, verse 41, here, I'll read it to you. It says, and it came to pass that when Elizabeth heard the salutation of Mary, the babe leaped in her womb. Okay, we're talking about baby Jesus and Mary. He's unborn. He has not been born yet, calling him a baby. The word for baby here, the original Greek word, when it was originally written, brephos. Okay, very interesting. Remember that? I'm going to slide over here to the next chapter in Luke, chapter 2, verse 12. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. So now this Jesus has been born, and the angels are giving salutation to others, letting them know that Jesus, or a baby, has been born and is laying in a manger wrapped in swaddling clothes. And guess what the Greek word is for a babe? The babe that is wrapped in swaddling clothes is the same exact word, brephos, B-R-E-P-H-O-S, that is used to describe Jesus before he was born. So according to the Bible, that was written under the influence of the Holy Spirit, the same word is used to describe a baby that is unborn as a baby that is born. I'm telling you, the Bible supports life at conception. It is a baby. In the womb and out of the womb, it is a human baby. So, in other words, in the Bible, when you're reading how the angel, how it appeared to Mary and to Joseph both and told them that Mary was with child, that Greek word was brephos, B-R-E-P-H-O-S, and it's the same exact word used in Luke 1, 41 through 44. It's astonishing. So a baby in a manger is called the exact same thing as a baby just a few weeks after conception, still yet in the mother's womb. A born baby and an unborn baby are the same. They are a baby. They are a life. In Exodus chapter 21, verses 23 through 25, if men struggle with each other and strike a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet there is no injury, he shall surely be fined as the woman's husband may demand of him. And he shall pay as the judges decide. But if there is any further injury, then you shall appoint as a penalty a life for a life. In other words, if a woman is pregnant and she is accidentally struck and that baby's life is taken, then he could be put to death because he has taken a life. God is saying that if an unborn baby is killed, that the man that killed it, he should also be put to death because it is also a life. An unborn baby is a life. The Bible goes on, life for a life, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot, burn for a burn, wound for a wound, bruise for a bruise. Because it's serious. You better not be hurting babies. I love what Ronald Reagan said in 1988, and I agree with him wholeheartedly on this, the matter of abortion. He said this, and I quote, "I call America a good nation, a moral people. Too charitable but realistic consideration of the terrible cost of abortion on demand. To those who would say this violates a woman's right to control of her own body, can they deny that now the medical evidence confirms the unborn child is a living human being entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?" He goes on to say, "Let us unite as a nation and protect the unborn with legislation that would stop all federal funding for abortion and with a human life amendment making, of course, an exception where the unborn child threatens the life of the mother. Our Judeo-Christian tradition recognizes the right of taking a life in self-defense. But with that one exception, let us look to those others in our land who cry out for children to adopt. I pledge to you tonight, I will work to remove barriers to adoption and extend full sharing in family life to millions of Americans so that children who need homes can be welcomed to families who want them and love them." In 1984, President Reagan says this, "Since 1973, more than 15 million unborn children have had their lives snuffed out by legalized abortions. That is over 10 times the number of Americans lost in all our nation's wars." Can you imagine now how staggering that number would be? We're up to 62 million babies murdered. And Joe Biden has made it crystal clear that he is not going to allow Roe versus Wade to be overturned. And if by some twist of fate it is, he has declared that he will write or push legislation to make sure it cannot be changed or overridden, that it will live on, that it will exist, that it will maintain and stay the course as the nation's law. This is Antonin Scalia when he was still alive. Let's hear what he has to say about Roe versus Wade. This is a CNN interview. Listen to this.
Let's turn to Roe v. Wade, because you, Justice Scalia, you had very strong opinions about this at the time. I know you do now. Why were you so violently opposed to it?
I wouldn't say violently. I'm a peaceful man. you mean adamantly opposed.
Adamantly.
Basically, because the theory that was expounded to impose that decision was a theory that does not make any sense, and that is, namely, the theory of substantive due process. There's a due process clause in the Constitution, which says that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process. That is obviously a guarantee, not of life, not of liberty, not of property. You can be deprived of all of them, but not without due process. My court, in recent years, has invented what is called substantive due process by simply saying some liberties are so important that no process would suffice to take them away. And that was the theory used in Roe versus Wade, and it's a theory that is simply a lie. The world is divided into substance and procedure.
So should abortion be illegal in your eyes?
Should it be illegal?
Yeah.
I don't have public views on what should be illegal and what shouldn't. I have public views on what the Constitution prohibits and what it doesn't prohibit.
But I mean, the Constitution, when they framed it, they didn't even allow women to have the right to vote. I mean, they gave women no rights.
Oh, come on. No rights?
Did they?
Of course. They were entitled to due process of law.
All kinds
of rights. You couldn't send them to prison without the same kind of a trial that a man would
get. But again, it comes back to changing times. The Founding Fathers were never going to have any reason at that time to consider a woman's right to keep a baby or to have an abortion. It wouldn't have even entered their minds, would it?
I don't know why. Why wouldn't it?
Because at the time it was just...
They didn't have wives and daughters that they cared about?
They did, but it was not an issue that they would ever consider framing in a constitution.
I don't know.
But when women began to take charge in the last century of their lives and their rights and so on and began to fight for these, everybody believed that was the right thing to do, didn't they? I mean, why would you be instinctively against that?
My view is, regardless of whether you think prohibiting abortion is good or whether you think prohibiting abortion is bad, regardless of how you come out on that, my only point is the Constitution does not say anything about it. It leaves it up to democratic choice. Some states prohibited it, some states didn't. What Roe versus Wade said was that no state can prohibit it. That is simply not in the Constitution. It was one of those many things, most things in the world, left to democratic choice.
I'm going to stop it right there because this is one thing. I'm sorry, hold on, commercial. This is one thing that the left tends to do, on, especially on CNN, MSNBC, and all these guys on the left. They always try to, well, it happens also in the hearings, like, for example, when, and I love saying this now, Justice Amy Coney Barrett. When she was then just plain old Honorable Amy Coney Barrett, when they were interviewing her, they were asking her these gotcha questions, trying to get her to roll on Roe versus Wade. They wanted her to either say one way or the other, yes, I support. They wanted her to support it. They wanted her to say, yes, I support it. I will never overturn it. Okay. But they were asking her these gotcha questions. But as a justice, you can't do that. You can't go in to a job and say, I concur, this has got to stay the way, this has got to stay the law, or no, I'm going to work to overturn this. Because right now, there's no litigation saying that it has to go either way. So if she was to say on record, I think it should be overturned, that would imply that when litigation does come, that she's already made up her mind and she's predisposed to vote one way or the other. And you can't be that way as a justice. And that's problematic. And this guy here that was interviewing him did the exact same thing, trying to ask these gotcha questions. So with that being said, I want to go to when Amy Coney Barrett was supposedly refusing to address the question of Roe versus Wade should be overturned. And this is when Dianne Feinstein and all her wisdom was trying to ask the gotcha question to her. So let me start this video up and I will, here it is.
Let me begin with a question that the chairman touched on. And it's of great importance, I think, because it goes to a woman's fundamental right to make the most personal decisions about their own body. And as a college student in the 1950s, I saw what happened to young women who became pregnant at a time when abortion was not legal in this country. I went to Stanford. I saw the trips to Mexico. I saw young women try to hurt themselves. And it was really deeply, deeply concerning. During her confirmation hearing before this committee in 1993, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was asked several questions about her views on whether the Constitution protects a woman's right to abortion. She unequivocally confirmed her view that the Constitution protects a woman's right to abortion. And she explained it like this, and I quote, "The decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a woman's life, to her well-being and dignity. It's a decision she must make for herself. When government controls that decision for her, she is being treated as less than a fully adult human responsible for her own choice," end quote. At one point, our former colleague, Orrin Hatch, then the ranking member of this committee, commended her for her being, quote, "very forthright in talking about that," end quote. So I hope, and you have been thus far, be equally forthright with your answers. In Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey, Justice Scalia, as was said earlier, joined the dissent, which took the position, and I quote, "We believe that Roe was wrongly decided and that it can and should be overruled, consistent with our traditional approach to stare decisis in constitutional cases." Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe was wrongly decided?
So, Senator, I do want to be forthright and answer every question so far as I can. I think on that question, I'm going to invoke Justice Kagan's description, which I think is perfectly put. When she was in her confirmation hearing, she said that she was not going to grade precedent or give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And I think in an area where precedent continues to be pressed and litigated, as is true of Casey, it would be particularly, it would actually be wrong and a violation of the canons for me to do that as a sitting judge. So if I express a view on a precedent one way or another, whether I say I love it or I hate it, it signals to litigants that I might tilt one way or another in a pending case.
So on something that is really a major cause with major effect on over half of the population of this country, who are women, after all, it's distressing not to get a straight answer. So let me try again. Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe was wrongly decided?
Senator, I completely understand why you are asking the question, but again, I can't pre-commit or say, yes, I'm going in with some agenda, because I'm not. I don't have any agenda. I have no agenda to try to overrule Casey. I have an agenda to stick to the rule of law and decide cases as they come.
Well, what I'm, as a person, I don't know if you'll answer this one either. Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe can and should be overturned by the Supreme Court?
Well, I think my answer is the same because, you know, that's a case that's litigated. It could, you know, its contours could come up again. In fact, do come up. You know, they came up last term before the court. So I think, you know, what the Casey standard is, and that's just, it's a contentious issue, which is, I know, one reason why it would be comforting to you to have an answer. But I can't express views on cases or pre-commit to approaching a case any particular way.
Well, that makes it difficult for me, and I think for other women also on this committee, because this is a very important case, and it affects a lot of people, millions and millions of women, and you could be a very important vote. And I had hoped you would say, as a person, you've got a lovely family, you understand all the implications of family life, You should be very proud of that. I'm proud of you for that. But my position is a little different. You're going on the biggest court of this land with a problem out there that all women see one way or another in their life. And not all, but yeah, certainly married women do, and others too. And so the question comes, what happens? And will this justice support a law that has substantial precedent now? Would you commit yourself on whether you would or would not?
Senator, what I will commit is that I will obey all the rules of stare decisis, that if a question comes up before me about whether Casey or any other case should be overruled, that I will follow the law of stare decisis, applying it as the court has articulated it, applying all the factors, reliance, workability, being undermined by later facts and law, just all the standard factors. And I promise to do that for any issue that comes up, abortion or anything else. I'll follow the law.
Okay, so Justice Barrett is like 10 times smarter than any liberal senator. Anybody that tried to ask her a gotcha question, they didn't get the response they were hoping to get. And you saw, right? You saw how Justice Scalia refused to buy into the line of questioning. He refused to answer the gotcha question. She did the same thing. But it's not always been the case. Here's another. This is an NBC News video, what women justices have had to say about Roe versus Wade in their hearing. So I get
my
that.
Own view.
Get this going for you, and I'm going to shut up here, and you can listen to this, and I might tap in just to tell you who's speaking.
My own view in the area of abortion is that I am opposed to it as a matter of birth control or otherwise.
It's in 1981.
The subject of abortion is a valid one, in my view, for legislative action. Subject to any constitutional restraints or limitations.
This is something central to a woman's
Ginsburg.
Life, to her dignity. It's a decision that she must make for herself. And when government controls that decision for her, she is being treated as less than a fully adult human responsible for her own choices.
The government should be deciding
it all.
The court's
decision in Planned Parenthood versus
Casey. This is 2009.
Casey reaffirmed the core holding of Roe. That is the precedent of the court and settled in terms of the holding of the court.
I think that the continuing holdings of the court are that the woman's life and that the woman's health must be protected in any abortion regulation.
Is Roe a super precedent?
How would you define super precedent?
I thought someday I'd be sitting in that chair. I'm not. I'm up here, so I'm asking
okay,
you.
Okay, well, people use super precedent differently.
Okay.
The way that it's used in the scholarship and the way that I was using it in the article that you're reading from was to define cases that are so well settled that no political actors and no people seriously push for their overruling. And I'm answering a lot of questions about Roe, which I think indicates that Roe doesn't fall in that category. As Richard Fallon from Harvard said, Roe is not a super precedent because calls for its overruling have never ceased, but that doesn't mean that Roe should be overruled.
Anyway, so I think that first one was O'Connor, if I remember right, and I want to guess at Sotomayor for the third one. I couldn't remember who her by her face. I was looking it up on the internet, and I'm unsure about that. But the bottom line is, so they all have these opinions. You can tell when the left-leaning judges have an opinion because they want to express it, but the right-leaning judges, they keep those opinions to themselves because unless there's litigation, they shouldn't be opening their yaps talking about it. They shouldn't have a predisposed opinion about anything until the facts of the case are in front of them. We got a very important election coming up. Very important. And we all know how Joe Biden is... Where he leans. He supports Planned Parenthood. He supports Roe versus Wade. And if he has his way, we're looking at several more million babies over the course of the next few years having their lives snuffed out of their mothers, out of the safety of their mother's protection. And it's a sad, sad, sad thing to talk about. So I told each of you that I was going to give you an opportunity to back out when I come to this portion of my show, my podcast. This is your opportunity. I'm going to be talking about four different types of abortions and the methods are going to be described in some detail. And it's not for the weak-kneed. It's not for the weak-stomached. If you want to know this for the sake of knowledge, stick around. If you want your, I'm going to leave it up to you as parents. You decide what you want to do with your family. I mean, of course, that's your role. But this is your opportunity. Go now, because in 3 seconds, I'm going to start reading this. Abortion methods. All right, so we got the first one we'll discuss here. I'm going to read the description of this. It's called the suction abortion. This is used during the first 3 months of pregnancy. A suction tube, 27 times stronger than the home vacuum cleaner, is inserted into the womb. The powerful suction tears the baby apart, limb from limb, and sucks it from the womb along with the placenta. The baby's remains are deposited into an attached waste bottle. Dilation and curettage, or DNC. This is used at the end of the third month of pregnancy. All right, so we're talking 12 weeks. We got a baby here that's 12 weeks old. The nervous system is fully functional and the muscles are spasming. It feels pain. It's jerking and jumping in the mother's womb. The cervix is dilated. Ring forceps are inserted into the womb and the baby is extracted piece by piece. Then a curette, which is a sharp knife in a loop shape, is inserted and used to scrape away any of the baby or the placenta that remains. Profuse bleeding follows. Can you imagine just being ripped to pieces? You don't even know what's happening. You're just being ripped to pieces. This one's called DNE, dilation and extraction. Used after 13 weeks, the cervix is dilated and the unborn child is dismembered with plier-like forceps. Oh, this is hard to read. Force is needed to pull the baby apart. The instrument is used to seize a leg or other part of the body and then with a twisting motion, tear it from the baby's body. Excuse me a second. Trying to maintain my composure. The baby's spine is snapped and the skull is crushed. After the baby parts are removed, they are reassembled outside the womb to be sure all are removed. Frequently, baby parts are left inside the mother's womb. This can cause serious complications and sometimes death. And the last one I'm going to talk about is called partial birth abortion. And this was made famous because we're talking late in pregnancy. Partial birth abortions are used from the 4th month through the end of the 9th month of pregnancy. So we're talking about a fully formed baby. These late-term abortions are regularly used to kill healthy babies that pose no danger or threat to their mother. For this abortion, the abortionists use ultrasound to locate the unborn baby's legs. Forceps are then used to pull the baby's legs through the birth canal, delivering the baby's feet first, except for the head. Scissors are then used to puncture the base of the back of the head. A suction device is then inserted to suction out the baby's brain so the skull will easily collapse. The dead baby is then removed. So, Let's see here. Let's see what other kind of abortions there are. Saline amniocentesis, used after 16 weeks. A concentrated salt solution is injected with an amniocentesis needle into the amniotic fluid. The baby breathes and swallows it and dies over an hour later. So they poison the baby. Prostaglandin. Used late-term prostaglandin is injected into the amniotic sac, causing premature labor and delivery of a dead baby. Intracardiac injections. Poison is injected into the chest or heart of the fetus via a long needle inserted through the mother's abdomen. The dead baby is aborted. Sometimes this results in the loss of all babies, of all the babies, when using this method for pregnancy reduction with multifetal pregnancies. Chemical abortions. The pill, RU486, methotrexate, norplant, IUDs, prostaglandins, and depo-provera all cause early abortions. You may not be aware of the fact that the pill has the backup, has a backup abortifacient action that works to kill a baby very early in its development if ovulation occurs and the conception takes place. That's all I got. And I'm glad, because that was difficult to read. The bottom line is this. You're killing a baby. And that, in my opinion, unless you're doing it in self-defense to save your own life, makes you evil. If you're doing it for the sake of convenience because you don't want to raise a baby, that's one of the most heinous, disgusting things a person on this planet can do, is kill someone that is absolutely defenseless. In the book of Psalms, chapter 139, starting with verse 13, it reads this: "For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well." Goes on to say, "Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them." In other words, God has a plan, a purpose, an appointment for every human being, every human baby, before they are even conceived. And even after conception, when we are still being formed, when we're still a baby without form, we have a purpose. And they have a right to life and liberty in the pursuit of happiness. I know this has been a tough and controversial topic, a very tough and controversial podcast for me to cover and for you to listen to. But I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you're listening. I'm going to have to let you go on just a couple notes here. Remember that The Rising Republic is listener-supported, so be sure to subscribe on most major podcasting applications. Also, don't forget to check out The Rising Republic Video Bites on YouTube. To join my newsletter, head on over to www.ldouglashogan.com and register. I can also be followed on Facebook at Honor Your Oath and on Amazon.com. Remember to keep your finger straightened off the trigger until you're ready to fire, and always keep your weapon pointed in a safe direction. I'm L. Douglas Hogan. Thank you for listening to The Rising Republic.